This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Winnipeg Jets game day, Mr. Lube game day, as the Jets take on the Dallas Stars starting at 2 p.m. at MTS Center. 3 hours of hockey talk gets you started on this Saturday morning. Big show for you coming up in about 1 hour's time. Frank Provenzano, three quarters of an hour from now, Frank Provenzano, former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars, current ESPN hockey insider, is going to be joining us. We'll talk about everything in the hockey world to do with Frank. He joins us the second Saturday of every month.
Easy for you to say, Drew.
I know. I told you guys before the show I'm a little under the weather. I'm already starting. I'm showing my illness to begin. Anyways, Frank Provenzano, second Saturday of every month, he joins us on this fine show. Coming up at 9 a.m., Wes Gilbertson of the Calgary Sun is going to join us, talk about the moves in the Flames front office, Jay Feaster and John Weisbrod fired earlier this week, and the search for a new general manager started by Brian Burke is ongoing. In about 90 minutes' time, big interview, real excited for this. Team Canada assistant coach at the Sochi Olympics, Ralph Kruger, is going to join us, going to call in to us from Switzerland, where he is scouting, pre-scouting for Team Canada to discuss everything around the Canadian Olympic hockey men's hockey program. Ralph Kruger going to join us at 9:30. And then at 10 a.m., Dr. Les Rikas from the Linda Market Dental Center is going to join us. Like I said, jam-packed 3 hours for you on this Saturday morning. Before we get into it, I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, how are you both doing? Good to see you here bright and early.
Yeah, good morning. Richie and I are doing well. We always do well. I have a question for you, though. Was Les Rikas always going to come on, or is he just coming on now because Remus chipped his tooth on the last show?
It's a good question. He was previously scheduled to join us regardless, right. So just fortuitous timing that Remus's teeth are falling out of his mouth as we go on air.
It's fortuitous, Drew.
I said fortuitous. Oh, okay. Is that like a gratuity mortgage joke right there with Jim Slater?
That's good. That's good.
That was pretty good.
You're a little bit under the weather, so that's fine.
I got it. I just wanted to make sure that's where you were going. I thought you were going there, but I wasn't 100% sure. That was pretty good. I'm sure Rick is up and enjoying.
There's no chance Rick's up.
It's bright and early. He's prepping, I bet.
This is Rick we're talking about. Rick preps.
I know Rick preps.
I feel like Rick's a night prepper.
You think he's a night before prepper?
Yeah.
Well, how was your prep? Did you guys do some good prep last night?
I did. We're ready to go here.
Let's get started then. Winnipeg Jets are in the midst of a 2-week, 6-game stretch where they play teams that are really below, with the exception of the St. Louis game.
Yep.
The teams that are below or at their level in the standings. Colorado is better than the Jets right now, but that's on the basis of the hot start to their season. Since they've slowed down, they've been right at the same level pretty much that the Winnipeg Jets have been playing at. So, I mean, when you look back at the first two games of this 2-week stretch, the 6-game stretch, you got the loss in regulation to St. Louis. You have the loss in overtime, in shootout to Colorado. So the Jets, they were certainly within striking distance to get a couple of wins. They end up with only 1 point, and you have Claude Noel talking about, he doesn't deal in moral victories. We talked about moral victories on this show last week, how this team seems to rely on them. Do you believe that this team doesn't rely on moral victories, or do you think that, when are they going to, prove that moral victories aren't good enough for them?
Well, I think this whole notion of moral victories, Richie, it's something that players and the coaches are asked about when the team loses a point. It's kind of one of those questions, the media has to ask questions, right? And after that was a really tough loss. The St. Louis game was also a tough loss. Mm-hmm. These are tough losses. The Jets, 33 games into the season, are already in a bad position as far as contending for a playoff spot because the Western Conference is so good and they haven't got off to the start that they wanted. And they went on the road trip and they won 4 of 6 games in the Eastern U.S. and that was I think we'd all agree that was pretty good. Maybe you'd like to have won 5 out of 6, but generally speaking, it was a pretty productive road trip. So you talk about moral victories, and I know Blake Wheeler had some comments about that, and he said, I'm kind of sick of moral victories, but guys, how many times over the last couple of years have we heard that they're sick of moral victories? Really, to me, it's just talk, right? This team needs clean 2 points every game. They need 2 points against the Stars. They needed 2 points against the Blues and the Avalanche, Richie. So I truly believe when Claude Noel says that he doesn't deal in moral victories, I don't think he's happy with 1 point. The game goes to a shootout, and then you flip a coin, and the Colorado Avalanche win. But that's a game where you had the lead, and you should have won that game. You should have stepped on the throat of the Avalanche, and you should have come out with the win there because you were in a good position to win. So I believe that these guys don't like moral victories, but I also think that they're just answering questions. Deep inside, these guys know where they're at. I mean, they've won 14 of 33 games, right? So you're below 500 in the best conference in the league, Richie. So, I mean, sure, they of course they don't. I don't think that they're happy with a point. I don't think anybody in that dressing room is truly happy with a point. And I could be wrong, but I didn't hear anybody in that dressing room that was saying, oh yeah, well at least we got a point. If these guys think that a point at this stage in the season is a success, then I guess they haven't looked at the standings. Because you talk about the Avalanche, Richie, and they're 21-9. Say whatever you want about the start. I mean, this is the team that they're competing for. They have 21 wins, mm-hmm. right? So they're behind the eight ball. They got to pick up points here.
Buffalo, Florida, and the Islanders. What are those three? Why are those three teams significant?
They're all at the bottom of the.
They're the only three. The only three teams that have less regulation and overtime wins combined than the Jets.
Say that one more time. So that
nobody else in the league has less regulation overtime wins than the Jets, aside from the Florida Panthers, the Buffalo Sabres, and the New York Islanders. So. At some point, as you said, you just got to do it. You just got to win some games. You have to be able to, you know, clamp down and actually perform when it matters most. Let me go on a little bit of a tangent. I did it on the podcast, Drew, for a bit. If I'm Claude Noel, and Claude Noel's done a fine job, I don't think it's anything special. I don't think it's the worst job ever. It's the middle of the road. I ain't going down against the Colorado Avalanche with Devin Setoguchi and Olli Jokinen starting overtime, and Devin Setoguchi starting the shootout. And Devin Setoguchi, the passenger. I mean, what has this guy done? And I'm going down in the shootout. Shootout's crapshoot. Sure, I understand that, but I'm going down with Devin Setoguchi. Could he look less into the games? Is that possible? I'm not going to go down with Ladd shooting second. It's only two shooters if you obviously, as it was on Thursday, go with Little. Get your horses out there early. If you're going to lose, might as well lose with your horses. And there, to me, that didn't really make much sense, but overall, it's like beating a dead horse. It's the same old thing. This team's middling right now. So they're going to make a run, or the season's over at the end of December. That's what it is. So they can go in and say, you know, they can, we're sick of this, we're sick of that. Well, how about you go, you know, how about Blake Wheeler? You're making up $5+ million a year. How about you go out there and go on a 6-game streak, tearing it apart, and taking this team to the next level? How about you don't keep talking to the media about this and that, and you just and you get focused. You talk to the media, but you get focused and you actually perform. Talk is cheap. This team talks a lot. This team says the right things for the most part. Who cares? Take it over. Go. You're the one guy, Blake Wheeler, that hasn't performed up to the level of the other guys on your line. Get going. Andrew Ladd, you're the captain. Get a streak going here. You can't rely on Olli Jokinen. Evander Kane may or may not play. Certainly, you're not going to rely on Devin Setoguchi. Scheifele looked really a lot better last game for sure, but he's a rookie. You're not going to rely on him. That'd be unfair. There's not much else to rely on. So you put it on your shoulders,
yeah.
Or you don't. That's why they pay you the big bucks. Yeah, if you don't want to get, if you want to make $3 million and be value, go ahead. But if you want to make $5+ million, and he had 2 goals last game and an awful turnover, but the idea is take it over. Go on a stretch here.
Exert your will on the other team. They played Dallas today.
And Pavlik's got to be better. Yeah, they played Dallas today. Winnable game.
Well, it's
a game. We'll break down Dallas.
Yeah.
That's a winnable game. You're at home against a team that certainly has its flaws, has better top-end talent than you, than almost every team does, than the Jets, and has a better goalie than you, but beatable. And you're at home in an afternoon game. It's minus 40 outside. Who the hell wants to come here in minus 40? You better make it at a place that nobody wants to come. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. It is so damn miserable outside. These teams don't want to be here.
The opponents.
Yeah. So it's miserable outside. Make it miserable inside. Like it was the first season. Because now it's nobody hits anybody. Nobody fights anybody. The crowd's not into it because there's nothing to be into. They were into Thursday night's game because there was something to cheer about for the most part.
Well, you score two goals in the first 5 minutes, the crowd's going to reward you.
But they're not into St. Louis game because that was boring as hell.
And you talk about moral back to the moral victories, Richie.
Like for the show, like you're just
no.
Leaving?
We'll see what Ezzy has to say. Okay. I might be done. For the
but
show.
Back to the moral victories, though. You look at the games, and the Jets right now are top of the league in one goal victories. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, one goal games. Pardon me. And you look at the games, and they've both been one goal games, and these are good teams. Okay, Colorado's struggling, but Colorado's got tons of talent. I mean, if you watch that game, Matt Duchene. How do you not put him on the Canadian Olympic team the way he was playing, right? He was struggling. He wasn't struggling against the Jets. But the point being, sure, you get the power play going. The power play has started to get going. But all that matters is a clean 2 points right now, because the Jets against the Blues, the Hawks, the Avalanche, and the Stars, and their division, the entire division, 3 wins in 16 games, right? So 3 wins in 16 games, you really can't be
3-10-3.
You can't be any worse than that, really. I mean... That's not acceptable, and they have to win the in-division games. If they ultimately, when I look at the season, sure, you can pick apart certain games, and you could say, okay, you know, the Jets should have beat Florida in Florida, but really, if you don't beat your teams in your division, guys, and sure, St. Louis and Chicago are two of the best teams in the NHL, but okay, well then you know that you're just not good enough. But the Colorados, the Dallases, the Nashvilles. In my opinion, the Jets can beat those teams, and they've played those teams well. They just haven't got the clean 2 points.
But you talk about, Ezzy, the one-goal games. But it's mental mistakes, too. St. Louis, 1-1, 3 minutes left. Bufflin goes along the boards, takes a penalty. You like it or you don't like it, takes a penalty. With 3 minutes left in the game against a good team with the number two power play in the National Hockey League on the boards. Not in front, on the boards. Stupid. Thursday night, Blake Wheeler with the puck with 15 seconds left at the top of the blue line, or 10 seconds left at the top of the blue line, covering for the defenseman, doesn't have an option, fires it to nobody, and hits and goes to the Colorado guy. Put it in deep. Those are preventable plays that allow you to win. That's not even a talent thing. That's a concentration thing. And so these one-goal games could easily be the other way had they been more focused.
And the problem, too, Drew, is you're looking at these teams coming into Winnipeg. You mentioned the cold and everything. Yeah, they don't like that. They shouldn't, whether it's minus 40, minus 20, whatever, they shouldn't like coming into the building. And I think right now that's too easy for a lot of teams. And a Western Conference team, specifically a Central Division team, they're fine with coming into the arena and having a one goal a game, a tied game, get
that's
the
right.
point.
Absolutely.
If they come out of our arena with a point, that's a victory for them. That's a moral victory and just a victory by getting the point. But for the Jets, they can't afford it right now. Dallas is another team. I think this is a very winnable game. We mentioned that earlier. Dallas is having all types of problems, and they're also in a position where they need the points. They're only a couple spots above the Jets right now, but they need the points as well.
They have Dallas this afternoon.
They're tied in points, but they have 3 games in hand.
Yeah, Jets are tied in points, but Dallas has 3 games in hand. Dallas this afternoon, and we'll break it down next segment in more detail. Mm-hmm. Buffalo on Monday, or I'm not sure if it's Buffalo, Columbus, or Columbus, Buffalo.
No, it's Columbus on Monday, Buffalo Tuesday.
Columbus has less points than you do. Buffalo has less points than you do. And Florida has less points than you do. That's the next week's schedule. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the year, you would have said we need games that we need to win is a game against Dallas at home. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a team we need to be better than to make the playoffs. I mean, these are 4 games in a row that they should have had circled on their calendar at the beginning of the year as 4 wins, mm-hmm. starting today. You're okay. You know, you don't like losing to St. Louis, but you know you can sort of understand it. Colorado, yeah, you get a point. Yeah, it's sort of a lousy point because you had the lead and everything else. But, I mean, you got to sweep the next 4. It's just period.
Well, you can get caught up in all of that. It's going to be extremely difficult for the Jets to make the playoffs. They got to win the next four. They got to win 7 out of 10 for the rest of the season. Right. So you have 33 games in the season, and there's 49 games left, if I can do the math correctly.
You need to win 70% of those. So
what's 70% of 49?
It's about 34 games.
Right? So, yeah, sure. Win 4 of the next games. Win 8 of the next games. You're going to have to go on a winning streak. And if they're able to beat the Stars, but they can't finish off the Jackets or the Sabres, you're into that same position again. Right? You have to go on a streak. We've talked about it for a couple of weeks now.
It's nice to beat the Rangers, and it's nice to beat the Islanders, but you got to beat, if you don't beat the Panthers to follow that up, it almost makes it not for nothing. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to today's Dallas Jets game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 8 in the morning here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $74,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers.
How's that coffee from Remus going, Drew?
It's not going down as smoothly as you think because it's completely invisible. But it was a nice gesture. Just the execution was a little bit lacking. We'll get to that a little bit later on.
Happy Remus is here before 10.
Yeah, he did good. He's here bright and early. Full kudos to him for that. Dallas Stars in town tonight, 14-11-5 is their record through the first 30 games that they've played this season. Like we mentioned, they have 33 points, 3 games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets, but the same number of points as the Winnipeg Jets. They're led by Tyler Seguin. Obviously, we know about Tyler Seguin very well. 28 games, 27 points, and Jamie Benn, 30 games, 26 points. The key for the Jets, if you had to pick one thing, is it just shut down Ben and Seguin to your best of your abilities, because you figure at that point in time you are better than them on the sort of the bottom three lines?
I don't know about that, but better being better than them on the bottom three lines, Drew, but the key to the game is definitely stopping that top line. You got Nikushkin up there now, which is who we talked about on Wednesday, so there's a lot of talent, there's a lot of speed, and there's a ton of skill on that line. The Jets could not... They handled Dallas... They handled that line in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I believe all those guys were healthy in that game. Seguin may not have played, though, in Dallas. Back when they were here in the first time around Dallas and Winnipeg, the Jets could not handle the speed of that line through the neutral zone. And they didn't get enough bodies on those guys in the zone, and they were creating a ton of speed and a ton of chances. So they can't let that happen again. A guy like Zach Bogosian seeing would be like a perfect fit to defend against those guys because of his skating ability. Obviously, he's not available today. So you have to wonder if it's going to be Buff and Enstrom, who I think would be trouble, or if you think maybe the Jets today go to Jacob Trouba and try and rely on him to shut down that line with speed. It's a big matchup for a young defenseman. Or what they probably might do is switch him off and on, you know, not necessarily go entirely matchup based. I know that Claude Noel likes to match up Buffon against big, strong guys. Ben is that.
Mm-hmm.
So he might go that way. And because it's a veteran, but that line and their ability to give and go, create speed, and they can shoot the puck too, which is interesting because when you got the skill that they have and you can shoot the puck, you're very dangerous off the rush, you're very dangerous off the cycle. So that's the biggest challenge today, is can they shut down the top line of Dallas? If they can, Drew, guys like Winnipegger Cody Eakin and Alex Chiasson scored last time he was here, Ray Whitney, Horkoff, these guys can play. So their second and third lines can do some damage. You have to be focused. Dallas' defense isn't great. And they got some youngsters I like. It's not great. and they got good goaltending. So this is not an easy game by any means.
Yeah, Richie, you mentioned the defense, and we've talked about it on the show. I think it was either last week or the week before when Robidaux was injured. So you've got Stefan Robidaux and Daly out. I think this is a perfect game for the Jets to get a clean 2 points. And you mentioned Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and they're playing so well that they really deserve to be on the radar of Team Canada. I think they're just on the edge of it. Jamie Benn's probably a little bit higher than Seguin, but you could argue both of those guys will look good on the big ice. And I think you nailed it as far as how the Jets need to play the Dallas Stars. You look at the St. Louis Blues in that top line. That top line with Oshie and Backes, they're punishing.
Right.
This line is not punishing. You talk about their speed and their skill. You might not have that many more players that are more skilled than those two guys. And then you throw in Nikushkin, and Peverly was on that line before, but now you've added that element, and I know how much you like him. And the Jets, this is a type of game where they need to be extra physical. And sure, they don't have Bogosian, but they had Jacob Trouba likes to throw his weight around, so I wouldn't have a problem with that if they want to move him up to the top pairing. I think the problem with Byfuglien and Enstrom is you're not really able to maximize their talents when they're together. Because they're both offensive-minded guys. And that's why I think that when you have Bogo in the lineup, they've put Byfuglien and Klitsam together, and then they've put Bogo with Enstrom. Now,
but they don't have those. I don't think those guys have the chemistry.
Right, but
I think chemistry, but I agree. I think they move the puck better and play better.
Right.
Especially Enstrom without together. The problem is that they can't defend.
Yeah, and they've had trouble defending, and this is the type of game when you've got not ideally their best defense. You've got Jamie Oleksiak, who's a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned, they've got the injuries there with Daly and Robidaux. Robidaux is one of their most physical defensemen, veteran defensemen. So this is a type of game where they can dominate down low.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my next point. You're exactly right, Ezzy. You got Goligoski, smaller guy. Gonchar, slower guy. Aaron Rome is certainly lacking in talent.
Played for a bit for the Moose, didn't he?
I think before he went to Vancouver.
Yeah, but the idea is, you're right, you can take that puck on the cycle and you can work those guys. You can get in on the forecheck on guys like Gonchar, and Goligoski's a good skater, but you can get in deep on him and hit him and intimidate him. Brendan Dillon, Jordy Benn, very quietly effective defensemen.
Yep.
I like both of them a lot. I think they're both going to be real nice players. Alexic's huge. So, you know, you've got to test the youngster, though. There's definitely ability to get the puck in deep and to sustain pressure. The Jets aren't great at that, though. They kind of are off the rush team. So you want to focus on taking advantage of that defense. You know, the whole idea of playing in there, you know, I love what the players say, what's a good game plan today? Oh, you know, play in their end. It's like, oh, I thought you were going to play in your own end. I thought that was the game plan. But the idea is, in this case, you want to be able to put the puck in deep and sustain pressure against this defense. It's not St. Louis. St. Louis picks that puck up, goes the other way, and they can defend off the cycle too. It's a different team.
Drew, I want to go back to talking about Mark Scheifele, because he's taken a lot of flack, and he's struggled big time this year. He went through that big goal-scoring drought. But I think that now that he's on that third line and he's starting to find his game, he's starting to throw his weight a little bit around. He's not a physical player, but you're seeing that he's getting in there a little bit. He was getting pushed off the puck a lot. But I really think that Hallischuk-Scheifele-Frolik line has been one of their best lines. Because Ladd, Little, and Wheeler, sure, they're always gonna get the bulk of the goals.
I'd change the line, by the way.
Sorry?
I would change it. I would take Hallischuk. This is what I would do. Be honest with you.
Matchmaker.
I take Hallischuk. I put him on the line with Jokinen. I take Wheeler and I put him with Scheifele. And I take Setoguchi and throw him on the top line so you can get him going. That's what I would do.
Why Hallischuk with Jokinen and why
Wheeler? I got nowhere else to put him. That's why.
Oh, okay.
The idea is Wheeler and Scheifele seem to have developed a chemistry, and I think that line could be effective.
They certainly were out. They're playing on the power play together, that line. Wheeler and Scheifele are on the same power play unit now, and they did play 4-on-4 together, Wheeler and Scheifele, and they did seem to have some chemistry. That's you get him going. I mean, I agree with
what
you...
He can play both wings, doesn't love it, but you know. Maybe Troy Wheeler on a different wing. I don't know. I just think you change it up a bit. This team's a little bit stale. And you need some offense. And I would switch it around like that.
I agree with you, though, Ezzy, to your point about Scheifele. I think he has played significantly better, say, the last... These have been the best 10 games, I think,
absolutely.
If you were
to break up the season into thirds...
Yeah.
So 11 games or whatever.
Your math is sharp today.
Right. Well, I know my dad's listening, so he'd be happy. Yeah.
I'm a retired math professor.
Yeah, I didn't do too well in first-year linear algebra, but at least I can do basic arithmetic. sometimes.
It's a big word.
So
obviously, vocabulary is going strong today, too.
Right. So the thing with Mark Scheifele is we talked about it before the season started, and there's so much pressure on Mark Scheifele. And every time people talk about Scheifele, you know, is he going to be a second-line center? How good is he going to be? You got to keep things in perspective, guys. 20 years old, Trouba's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And when you consider all of those guys, Richie, go back. Joe Thornton, former first overall picks. Vinny LeCavalier. None of these guys, it's very rare for a Crosby to come into the league, a MacKinnon to come into the league. MacKinnon, not so much. Crosby's in a kind of a league of his own. Let's say Crosby and Ovechkin. For a guy to come into the league and absolutely tear it up, I mean, so I think Mark Scheifele, you got to be happy with the steps that he's taken in his game. Because earlier on in the season, guys, he's getting pushed off the puck. And a guy like Scheifele, Richie, he's got to be engaged in the offensive part of the game. His game is not going to be a guy that dumps a puck in and cycles it. And he's the guy that wants to score off the rush, make plays. He's got great moves. And you're starting to see that a little bit. And he still needs to know where to pick his spots. But it's very promising. I think Michael Frolik has been one of the most consistent Jets all year. I got to say, again, I hope that, you know, as a fan of the Jets, I think that Frolik should be a guy that's signed to 2 or 3 years. I think the guy, if Michael Frolik is your third line right winger, I think that's pretty good. He can kill penalties and he chips in the odd goal. If he ends up with 15 goals and 35 points, you're happy with that because he's not more of an offensive player. But I think that line's been terrific. And you have to have, and in the NHL, we've talked about it so many times, you can't just have one line carrying your team. Sure, one line might be responsible for a lot of your offense, but many times when you're relying on one guy for a goal, and that's what happened on the road trip, guys. They were getting goals. Jokinen was scoring. Setoguchi was scoring. You were seeing different guys contributing. But this is a must-win game, absolutely, and I think it's a winnable game when you consider the struggles that Dallas is having. Ray Whitney's only got one goal this year. Sagan, Ben, and Nikushkin are really carrying that team. So this, I think Dallas is a one-line team, and I think with the injuries on defense, you can take advantage of that, absolutely.
We'll see if the Jets do it. Game time, 2 p.m. here on TSN 1290, the three-headed monster of Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call for you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to evaluate the Winnipeg Jets defense.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290.ca. As you, generally speaking, when you're on radio and you come back from break, that's not the key moment to take a bite out of your sausage biscuit. Hang on, let's just wait till he swallows.
Wait till he chews.
Great song.
Thanks for that insight. Winnipeg Jets defense.
You got it. I mean, you got it in radio. Let me tell you something about radio, Drew.
Come on, Drew. Yeah, let's know what's about radio.
When you have to go to the bathroom, when you have to eat, when you have to drink, you just do it when you can. It's opportunistic. So, I mean, you were yammering during the break, and I didn't have time to eat. So
it wasn't the lead. You were telling a story during the break.
Did you tell a story?
It was story time.
Oh, yeah, about John Tortorella.
Yeah, exactly. He told the
Jesse Pollock, who's interning. He's up, and he wanted to hear, you know. I mean, Drew, this is a mentorship process, okay?
Who's your mentor?
My mentor?
Why'd you get two hash browns, not just one?
I didn't even realize I got two. Actually, I have a bit of a beef with, I'm not going to mention the business on air, but they told me that if I got the hash brown, it would be less. And I got the hash brown, and it was more.
Yeah, that isn't less. By the way, let's talk about something quickly before we go. There's a couple of things to talk about today, but we'll talk about one now. I'm leaving the game on Thursday night, and as you're supposed to be at a local establishment, already having reserved a table or picked up a table for us. So I turn off of Donald. I turn on to Stradbrook. I go over to Grosvenor. I'm driving down Grosvenor. It's slippery conditions. You know,
It's
winter. Very slippery conditions. I'm driving down Grosvenor, the regular speed. See this guy pull up to the stop sign, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, this guy's going to stop. It's a little bit of a roll, okay? And I'm like, okay, so should I pit my brakes here? Like, what's this guy going to do? Is he going to cross in front of me? Turns right into my lane. Starts driving. I have to hit the brakes. I was like, whoa. Like, I might hit this guy. Just make sure I don't hit the guy. Driving behind him, windows down, the guy's smoking out of his car. I'm like, whoa, this guy's a real winner, this driver, I tell you. Look closer. Legal Curve sticker on the back. It's Ezzy.
And you were talking to your mom on the phone,
too. Yeah, I was like, this idiot cut me off. I'm like, hold on. It's Ezzy.
He's our idiot.
You know what the best part of that was? That Richie informed me that my taillight was out.
Yep.
And I had no idea.
Yeah, it's been out for like a year, man.
No, you mad, bro? Yeah, so it was unfortunate. I need to make my stops a little bit better.
Well, the police
listening. Or stop, period. Yeah. Not even just better, just stop, actually. You know, that would work just as well. Yeah. You know, Winnipeg Jets defense, and we know that they haven't really been at full strength defensively in terms of, you know, because of injuries, probably for the majority of the year. I'm not 100% sure how many games that their entire, you know, what they thought was going to be their starting six.
It's probably like half a dozen, Drew.
If that, I would suggest you're probably right. It just seems like they've, you know, when, you know, first Trouba was out and then Bogosian's been
out. Everybody's got injuries. Keep going.
I know everybody's got injuries. I just want to evaluate the, you know, the Winnipeg Jets defense and talk about how they've been playing as a unit lately and how they've been playing individually. Like, I mean, you look at this defense. Who jumps out at you? I mean, let's just ask the question. Is Jacob Trouba the best defenseman on this team?
I knew you were going to ask that.
It's a very Drew question.
And I think Drew's asked that at least five times. I think it's too early to say he's the best, because if we're dealing in, you know, superlatives or, you know, those types of things, and we're saying he's the best, I don't think he's the best yet. He's 19 years old. Does he have unbelievable talent, and is the future really bright for Jacob Trouba? Absolutely. Jacob Trouba has that. First off, he's an unbelievable skater, and his ability to identify when to use his body, he's physical, he knows when to jump into the rush. So he's stood out. And I think we all expected really good things out of Jacob Trouba. Now, he missed 17 games with that neck injury. That was horrible. He's managed to come back, and Richie, it looks like he hasn't missed a beat. So as far as Jacob Trouba goes, I think his development is going very well. And I think he's playing, I guess you'd probably say 19, 20 minutes a game. Sometimes he's playing even more. But Claude Noel's putting him out sometimes on the power play. Mm-hmm. And he got that assist on Michael Frolik's goal. Mm-hmm. And so, but as far as the defense goes, you don't have Zach Bogosian. Richie mentioned that every team's got injuries. Dallas has injuries. Robidaux and Daly are out. You can go up and down the NHL. Every team has injuries. There's not that many teams that have no injuries in their starting lineup. But I think that the Jets, yes, to answer the question, I think guys have stood out, and I think the Jets are a better defensive team. If I look at Dustin Byfuglien, sure, as Dustin Byfuglien made mistakes, he took that minor penalty against the Blues, and that was bad. I think Dustin Byfuglien's our MVP this year. I think he's been our best defenseman. I think he creates offense better than anybody. He's top five in the NHL in defenseman scoring. And, yeah, here in Winnipeg, these guys are under the microscope. So every little mistake Dustin Byfuglien makes is under the microscope. But I think he's been pretty good defensively. And I go back to that Eastern Conference road trip, and the Jets were only giving up a couple goals a game, and I think they've played better as a unit. I think Keaton Ellerbe, who you could argue is probably an extra defenseman, mm-hmm. I think he's played pretty well. And, he's not the best guy with the puck. He plays more of a simple, physical game, but I think he's done a pretty good job. Mark Stewart, since he's been back from injury, I think he does what he does. He's physical. He blocks shots. He's up in the league leaders in blocked shots. So as a group, sure, is this the St. Louis Blues, Richie? As far as the talent level, no. But I think they've done pretty well defensively. And sure, you'd want Bogo in the lineup, but I think guys have stepped up. There's always going to be issues. But I think as a group, the way I look at it, glass half full, Rich, I think the group has gotten better throughout the season, better than they were early in the season.
Mm-hmm. You know, Drew, is he the best defenseman? No, he will be pretty soon, I think. I think so when you're not playing against the top players all the time. It's hard to say that. You know, Dustin Byfuglien, talk about his defensive shortcomings and stuff, and answer him to that point as well. But at the same point, I mean, this team doesn't really have too many better options, especially with Bogosian out, to play against those top guys. So, you know, if on other teams, if they were put in positions a little bit less pressure defensively and more options offensively, I think they'd look even better. But overall, I mean, it's only a matter of time. I think Trouba is proving to be more than people probably expected. And as you mentioned, all of his qualities, if he can continue to take that neutral zone attack that he's created from speed and puck handling to create even more in the offensive zone, he's going to be unstoppable. So not yet, but close to it. And you can see that in the trust that Claude Noel is putting in him, because the truth is, when you have a guy like Trouba, and you look at thinking down the road here, you have a guy who can be big enough to defend and also fast enough to defend. and quick enough to defend. Two different things, I think, there. And those qualities don't come along very often. You know, we talk about the shortcomings of some of the other guys. You know, Stewart's tough enough to defend. He's not fast enough to defend at times. And Enstrom's fast enough to defend, but he's not big enough to defend. And so there are issues there. That's why the Byfuglien thing is always, you know, is always gets the fans going on both sides, because Dustin Byfuglien naturally can skate and is big enough. Sometimes he gets out of shape, he's not as good of a skater, but the physical tools are all there. It's a matter of focusing.
Back to Jacob Trouba for a second, and this might be an unfair question to ask of a 19-year-old. What's his ceiling right now?
I'm not touching that one.
Sorry. What's his ceiling right now? Is it too soon to tell what his ceiling is?
No. Yeah, probably too soon to tell to an extent. I mean, he's going to be he'll be a number one defenseman if he keeps playing like this.
Yep. Absolutely.
There's not many of those.
And I should clarify, too, because we watch a lot of hockey, and you have these conversations, kind of these water cooler conversations, or these conversations.
I think it's the keg conversation.
Exactly.
Keg
or conversations at the keg or in your local bar, and people are asking us this all the time. A friend of ours that, you know, just moved to Toronto was asking, is Trouba our best player? Skill-wise, he might be. But as far as, you know, right now, is he the best defenseman? I think he's still too young, and he hasn't done enough to say he's the best defenseman.
He still has some offensive stuff that needs to develop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But put it this way, Drew. 2 years from now, 3 years from now,
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking about Jacob Trouba is our number one shutdown defenseman in the same vein as Alex Pietrangelo, mm-hmm, as PK Subban.
I agree.
All these guys, I think that skill level's there. And that's great for Jets fans and the Jets team, because that means they got a steal in 2012 in the draft. Look at all of the defensemen that were taken before, mm-hmm, Jacob Trouba. He might be better than all of them.
Right now, yeah, probably.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Frank Provenzano, ESPN insider, former assistant general manager to the Dallas Stars, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
.45 in the morning here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Mr. Lube game day, as the Jets will play the Dallas Stars starting at 2 p.m. at MTS Center. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's an ESPN insider. He's the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars, Frank Provenzano. Frank, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be there.
Frank, you know, we'll start with this topic. It was pointed out to us earlier this week, and I have to admit I was not aware of this clause in the collective bargaining agreement, that when a player gets a no-trade clause in a contract, it does not apply until that player is eligible or would be eligible for UFA status. Can you explain this clause and this concept to our listeners?
Yeah. You can't. A no-trade clause doesn't become active. Let's say you sign a player coming out of a contract. He's 23 years old, and you sign him to a six-year deal. You can put a no-trade clause in there, but it doesn't become active until he would have otherwise hit free agency at 27. So use a Dallas example. Louis Erickson had a no-trade clause in his contract, but the Stars were able to trade him this summer without really getting his approval, I guess, because it wasn't active yet, I believe. I'd have to verify that. But if you do a no-trade clause, you can't sort of put a clause in there that goes against the CBA.
So just to clarify, if I'm 23 years old and I sign a seven-year deal and I would have become an unrestricted free agent at 27, even though I have a no-trade clause, it does not apply for those first 4 years of the contract, let's say?
That's right. So you could put a full no-trade clause in there saying, you know, you can't be traded without your consent, but in reality that clause is dormant until you would have otherwise been a free agent.
And Frank, we wanted to ask you about this because not that there's any imminent trades that we know of, but...
Well, you might get traded, Izzy.
Yeah, exactly. I might be traded, or most likely I'll be put on waivers and unclaimed. But for a guy like Tobias...
Or bought out.
Exactly, bought out.
With donuts.
Yeah, exactly. So for a guy like Tobias Enstrom, he's got a no-movement clause, and a lot of people are saying, oh, well, he's got a no-movement clause, he's not going anywhere. But are no-trade clauses overblown in that respect? Because you look at it and you say there's no ability to prevent a trade, or you could prevent a trade, sorry, because if a player gets asked to waive his no-trade clause, he feels like he's not wanted.
I think all a no-trade or a no-move clause does is really give the player a say in where he ends up.
Right.
Because it's a relationship. And so there's no point, in my mind, in forcing a player. I mean, it's in nobody's interest, the club or the player, to have a player that is totally unhappy and doesn't want to be there anymore because he's probably not going to perform very well. So really all a no-trade or a no-move clause does is give the player some say. And you'll see a lot of no-trade clauses be partial, where they say each year you can give a list of 10 teams or 15 teams, or if the team makes the playoffs, you have 10 teams. If it doesn't make the playoffs, you have 6 teams. So it's just a measure of control.
Frank, can you just, for our listeners, distinguish what a no-trade and no-move clause is so they can fully understand?
A no-trade clause is basically a clause that governs a trade. And what I mean by that is you can't make a trade without the player's consent. It's that simple. A no-move clause means you really can't get rid of the player any way, anyhow, other than buying him out. So you can't send him to the minors. You can't put him on waivers and get rid of him. He's not going anywhere.
Frank Provenzano is joining us, Drew, and Frank has a really interesting article on ESPN Insider about how each team can improve, how each team should improve in the Western Conference. Of course, the Jets play the Stars today. We're going to ask you about the Stars in a second, Frank. But when you spoke about the Jets in the article, which we'll link out on our Twitter page, you talk about the Jets needing to improve at center ice. How likely do you think that is for the team in the near future?
It's almost impossible to improve your center ice during the season because it's become a position of it's become, in my opinion, the most scarce position in the league. I think one of the reasons is the way the game is played now. It's the position that is a real 200-foot position. You have to. The center has a lot of defensive responsibilities in critical areas in the defensive zone, and then is relied upon to create offense in the sort of high percentage areas in the offensive zone. And so to find a player that can do both of those things well is very difficult, and to do it through trade in the season, you'd probably to patch that hole, you'd be chopping a few other holes in your boat. So that's something that you typically either try and address through free agency, although it's very expensive, or you draft and grow your own.
There's a ton of talk, Frank, in town and in Winnipeg about Evander Kane, and we know he can score and he's a great skater and he's a powerful guy. We don't know what the future holds for him in terms of being in Winnipeg or elsewhere. What's the perception of him outside of the organization? Like, for example, in Dallas, from the Stars' perspective, and you were there, what did people think of Evander Kane?
I think it's similar. They see him as a good young player that hasn't really reached his full potential yet. And there's quite a few of them in the league now. And the tricky thing with these players is when they come out of their entry-level contracts, they get big,
right,
big dollar commitments. And whereas before, you could maybe take a chance on a player that hasn't hit his full potential yet, because he might be on a bridge contract or a lower contract. Now you've got to be pretty sure of what he is. And to your point, you just don't really know yet.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He's an ESPN insider. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, shifting our attention to the Stars and your knowledge of the team, probably one of the more underrated and underappreciated goaltenders in the NHL is Dallas Stars goaltender Kari Lehtinen. What makes him such a good goaltender, and how did that trade come about years ago that brought him to Dallas?
Well, I mean, we had Marty Turco in the last year of his contract, and we're debating on whether or not to re-sign him. And I think we had come to the conclusion that maybe Marty was towards the end of his career, and so we were looking for other goaltending options, and Atlanta had Kari he was injured. I think he was coming off of back surgery that year, and I think they were looking, you know, you talk about Evander Kane, he was obviously a high draft pick that hadn't performed up to what they had hoped there, and with I think they were looking for a change of scenery for him, and we were looking for a goaltending option. We had the kind of the different vantage point that our general manager had actually played against them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Joe had a kind of an on-ice feel for him, Joe Noondyke.
Yeah.
Les Jackson, who was our player personnel guru, had been in Atlanta as well when he was drafted, or at least soon after, for a year, I think. So we had kind of a bit of a comfort level that we were willing to take a gamble on him because he had natural talent, we thought. And the change of scenery seems to have done him well. I think he's matured in terms of professionally his approach to the game. I think he'd be the first one to tell you that. And he really, you know, we went through bankruptcy in Dallas, and it was tough financially whenever a team's in bankruptcy to compete because you're near the bottom of the league in payroll. And we were sort of right around a playoff spot the last few years till the very bitter end, and it was largely because of Kari. He's been a very good goaltender for the Dallas Stars.
Frank, we wanted to ask you about Jamie Benn, who you're very familiar with. Jets play the Stars today. He's one of the guys that they're going to have to shut down. And when hockey fans, Canadian hockey fans specifically, are talking about who should make Team Canada, Jamie Benn is one of those guys that a lot of people say, yeah, he's got to be on the team. And other people say, well, you know, that means that another player isn't going to be on the team in his place. Do you think Jamie Benn should be on Team Canada? And if so, why or why not?
I absolutely think Jamie Benn should be on Team Canada. I'm biased. But he brings a package of skill and strength and sort of a power game with skill that you don't really find on the group of forwards that they have to choose from. And they have, you know, Team Canada obviously has a very formidable group of forwards to choose from. It's almost laughable. It's an embarrassment of riches to some degree. But he has a unique package that he brings that can give you a different look that maybe some of the other skilled players, highly skilled players on that roster, don't have. So I'm a big proponent of Jamie being on Team Canada. I think if Jamie played in a major hockey market, there would be no debate.
Yeah, he really is that talented, Frank. One of the things, you know, you talk about the core that you guys had in Dallas, and Jamie Benn just become such an exciting player to watch, never mind so how talented he is, too. Ray Whitney's a guy you guys brought in last year. How important was it when you brought in Whitney to kind of have a veteran guy who had been through it all, really, and to help bring along the youngsters? I think sometimes it appears that fans just want all the young talent possible, and they kind of ignore the veterans and the effect that they have. Was that one of the reasons why you brought Whitney in last year?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we brought Ray in because the previous season to last year, I think he had 80 points. So we also wanted his on-ice contribution, even though he's getting older, obviously. But we also brought him in because Jamie Benn, we thought at the time, was going to eventually be the captain of the Dallas Stars. And to bring in a guy like Ray Whitney, who is a real professional, to help as much, maybe not as much, but significantly off-ice as much as on in terms of leadership and example, absolutely that's part of the equation.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He works for ESPN Insider. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, sticking with the Stars, in terms of their defense, what youngsters on that back end should Jets fans watch out for with the Stars being in their division for years to come?
Well, Brendan Dillon certainly is probably their best young defenseman right now. their D is pretty banged up. They have Stefan Robida out for a few months here with a broken leg, and Trevor Daley out for a while with a lower body injury, I guess is what they call them now. I'd like to call them, since we're going to be so vague, we should just call them non-upper body injuries. But you know, they've got a lot of their uniforms are green, and which is probably a good color for the Stars defense right now because they're pretty green. But they've got Jamie Oleksiak, who's up with the team. I'm not sure if he's in the lineup tonight. Who's, I think, 6'8" and skates really well.
I think he will be in the lineup today, Frank.
They've got we traded for Connaughton at the trade deadline last year, mm-hmm. who's also with that team. There's a few players in the minors that, you know, the team is high on. A player by the name of Klingberg, who has some offensive talent. Patrick Nemeth, who's sort of a big body defensive defenseman. But I think the defensemen that are going to have the biggest impact are probably up with the team right now. Probably Brendan Dillon and Jamie Oleksiak are the two young players that the team is highest on, and certainly Brendan is already one of their best defensemen.
Yeah, we should clarify, it's probably Oleksiak or, I guess, Kevin Connaughton, and if they want to make a move, but it's a good point raised by you. We wanted to ask you a few more questions for you here. We wanted to ask you about 24/7, which is debuting tomorrow, leading up to the Winter Classic between the Leafs and the Red Wings. And when Randy Carlyle, Mike Babcock, you know, management's asked about, you know, is it a distraction? They obviously have to say no, right? But do you, in your opinion, do you think teams are distracted by the presence of all of these cameras and, you know, people holding boom mics above them and all this stuff?
I think at the time, it's probably not as distracting as you think. I think you sort of, you alter your behavior a little bit, and you know, the camera is behavior altering a little bit. You're obviously not going to say some things you'd normally say with a boom mic and a camera in your face. But, you know, they do become sort of part of the background. I think where they can maybe become a distraction is once 24/7 airs. And some of the footage that maybe you didn't realize was taken, you know, goes on TV and everyone sees it. Like, I almost think some of the distraction maybe with the Flyers was after it aired and some of Brzgalov's quotes
right.
were, you know, kind of widely disseminated. I mean, they're awesome, but, you know, was that more of a distraction after the fact than the actual filming? Or, you know, when Washington was on 24/7, was it more distracting that, you know, Bruce Boudreau was walking around in his Santa underwear, you know? Like...
Final question for you, Frank. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Obviously, the huge Canadian TV deal is going to have an effect on the cap, and other factors will as well. And it's projected to go up to about $70 million, and then people think, you know, 80, 90, even 100 within a few years. Do you think that the teams in the lower end of the revenue scale will be able to keep up with the rising cap over the next 5 years?
That's a good question, and you know, I don't know the detail of the. The new Canadian TV deal, it's obviously a big deal. And everyone talks about the cap going up, which helps the big revenue teams because they can spend money. And to the extent that you can use money as a weapon, maybe it allows them to do so more. What I'll be interested to see is how much... Everyone talks about the cap going up. I'll be interested to see how much the floor goes up. Mm-hmm. Because that is really going to drive the... If the floor rises at a rate, when you factor in, I'm going to make up a number because I don't know the details, but if each team gets an extra $20 million, you're not really getting $20 million because you're going to have to commit a large percentage of that to player payroll just because the floor is going up. And if your ticket sales don't rise at the same rate, you might be in a spot that some of these smaller market teams might be in a spot where they're feeling even more financial pressure. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because, you know, does this new Canadian TV deal drive even more interest in Canada, which drives even more secondary revenues up in the Canadian markets that pumps more money into the system and raises the floor even more? It will be interesting to see. So, I mean, with a $70 million cap, you're probably talking a floor in the mid-50s anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
A floor. I mean,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that in you know, a few years, Frank, that could be 75 or 80.
Yeah. I'm going to have to be an agent. This is so funny flowing through the system.
Frank Provenzano works for ESPN the Insider. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks very much, Frank.
Bye.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Wes Gilbertson from the Calgary Sun is going to join us to talk about the Flames' front office moves. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Shortly past 9 in the morning here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Calgary Sun, Wes Gilbertson. Wes, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. You're in Buffalo ahead of this afternoon's Flames Sabres game. So we do appreciate you giving us your time this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Wes, you know, we obviously brought you on to talk primarily about the Brian Burke decision to fire Jay Feaster and John Weisbrod. You know, were you surprised at the timing of the move at all?
I think, you know, I personally was a little bit surprised at the timing right when we heard the news, and I think the more that you think about it and hear Brian Burke explain it, maybe it's not that big of a surprise after all. He said when he arrived in Calgary in September that he needed some time to kind of evaluate what the current system was, what the, you know, what the front office looked like, and where he needed to go from there. And, you know, a lot has been made about his holiday trade freeze in the past, and so maybe people thought that these guys were safe through the holidays, but you know, his point on Thursday when we heard the news was, you know, when you decide to fire someone, you should tell them right away, and I guess that's what he did.
Wes, in terms of the time, obviously he had a little bit of, as you mentioned, a period where he got to evaluate Feaster and Weisbrod and whoever else. Was that enough time to give Feaster to, you know, because of the fact that they determined they were going to have a rebuild? And I realize he was there before Burke arrived, but did Burke give him enough time while Burke was there?
It's hard to say, and Burke was very... he was very upfront about the fact that this wasn't just about what he saw while he was there. This is about, you know, evaluations that he did of their past drafts, of their past trades, everything like that. He said he talked to Feaster and Weisbrod's former employers about them. So I don't know. I guess it's hard to say whether he had enough time or not. Certainly Jay Feaster had a few years as the general manager of the Flames, and now it's someone else's job.
Wes, we've heard a lot of different names being bandied about as far as who could possibly be the next general manager of the Calgary Flames. Former Calgary Flame Joe Nieuwendyk is one of those guys whose name has come up. He was the former GM of the Dallas Stars, obviously, albeit quite briefly. Are there any names that you're hearing as far as possible GM candidates for the Flames?
It's funny being here in Buffalo today, because I think, you know, the two teams are looking at a lot of the same guys, and when Brian Burke announced the firings on Thursday, you know, that was another reason for the timing, as he said, you know, there's another team looking and we have to get going. I think one of the hot names out there right now is Jim Benning, who has some pretty deep ties to the Sabres as a former scout and I think director of amateur scouting for them. He's been the assistant GM in Boston under Peter Chiarelli since I think 2006. So that's a name that I think is going to pop up with every general manager opening until he gets a general manager job. There's other names like that out there, other guys with, you know, assistant GM jobs right now that might be looking for a promotion. I think the thing is that nobody's quite sure whether this is a GM job in the truest sense of the word or how much say Brian Burke is going to have in hockey decisions. I mean, this is a very new system that the Flames are trying. Not a lot of teams are doing this. this way. I mean, the Avalanche are one example, and, you know, I don't think a lot of people there talk about Greg Sherman. It's always about Joe Sakic. So whether that scares off potential candidates that, you know, they feel like maybe it's still an assistant GM job under a GM title, I guess time will tell.
You know, on that point, Wes, I heard an interview with Brian Brooke the day of the firing, and he was asked, you know, would you have liked to have been GM? And he said that when he was interviewed that they had outlined this position as being the position they wanted him in, not him to be the GM. So he didn't really say he didn't want to be it. He just said that he didn't really have the opportunity, and this is what they wanted for him. You know, with that kind of pointed out, and with the speculation, you know, you hear Dave Poulin's name and about the 14,000 executives he had in Toronto, is it likely that he brings one of his boys in from Toronto to run the show together?
Those guys are certainly going to be on the list. I think the thing that's important to remember about Brian Burke, you know, even though we're here in Canada and everyone, you know, wants to talk about the Maple Leafs, you know, Brian Burke has worked with a lot of guys in this business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be easy to look, like you said, at Dave Poulin or Claude Loiselle in Toronto and say, well, he's just going to bring one of those guys. But, you know, with the exception of Nonis and Ron Wilson, I guess, he hasn't always just brought his own guys in everywhere he's gone. He's brought some fresh guys in. He's had some different guys in mind. So I think this search maybe is going to be a little more wide-ranging than we're sometimes giving him credit for, thinking he'll just bring someone in from Toronto to follow him. But that being said, those guys are definitely candidates. You know, he's comfortable with those guys. He knows that those guys are on board in terms of the type of hockey he wants to play. So I would think that he'll ask for permission and at least see where they stand on this.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Wes Gilbertson of the Calgary Sun discussing the front office moves that the Calgary Flames made earlier this week.
Wes, in terms of, you know, we mentioned Brian Burke. Brian Burke and Ken King, is that a strong bond, kind of giving Burke carte blanche?
It's hard to say at this point, just because Brian hasn't been around a lot. He said the other day that he hasn't been around a lot on purpose because he didn't want any confusion about who the general manager is. And he also made it clear when he took the job that he did have some prior commitments he had to uphold before he could be kind of full-time in Calgary. But, you know, certainly all indications are that there is a good relationship between Ken King and Brian Burke. You know, I would say that he has carte blanche on hockey decisions, but, you know, I couldn't say I'm 100% sure of that. That's just, you know, what I see around the rink, you know, what I hear talking to people. It seems to be a good relationship.
Wes, how attractive is the Flames job to potential candidates? I mean, does the presence of Burke there sort of, you know, neuter the you know, the opportunity for a lot of general managers, given that he's, you know, you sort of still think that Burke's going to be the guy to that's going to make a lot of the final decisions, it seems?
Well, you can look at it two ways. If you're an assistant GM right now, you know, there's 30 jobs in the NHL for a general manager, and you've got a lot of GMs who aren't going anywhere. You know, I talked about Benning in Boston under Chiarelli. Well, Peter Chiarelli's not going to lose his job in Boston anytime soon. You know, another name that's come up is Brad Trelawan in Phoenix. Well, Don Maloney's not going anywhere in Phoenix. So it has to be appealing in the sense that it's one of those 30 jobs and they don't come available very often. I guess the flip side of that is, like you said, you know, you're not getting, it's not your show. Brian Burke is there. I already made mention of Sakic in Colorado. You've got the same thing with LaFontaine now in Buffalo, where these guys are going to have significant say in the hockey decisions. The general manager is going to do the day-to-day stuff, but these guys are always going to be there when a you know, major move is made. And so maybe that will scare off some candidates with more experience, although I'm not quite sure that that's the kind of guy the Flames are looking for.
Wes, we know that what type of hockey that Brian Burke likes, and he came out this past week and he said that the Flames aren't big enough, they're not hostile enough.
Haven't heard that before.
He said, you know, that he wants blue and black and blue hockey. And, you know, he talked about the smallish guys, but You live in Calgary, even though you're in Buffalo right now. But as far as you know, what Flames fans in Calgary are thinking when he's saying all this, are they excited about that? Do they want this team to be tougher? I mean, is this a good strategy for the Calgary Flames to kind of bring back maybe more of the kind of Daryl Sutter days from 10 years ago?
I think fans in Calgary just want to see this team win games. It's been 4 years already since they made the playoffs, and they're just kind of starting the rebuild. I would say that they haven't hit rock bottom in this rebuild process yet. So I think if you said to a lot of fans in Calgary, oh, you know, we're going to play the New Jersey Devils trap of the mid-90s, and it's going to be like watching paint dry, but we're going to be in the playoffs every year, I think a lot of people would take it. There's a lot of excitement about Brian Burke that I sense in Calgary, and it's just based on his reputation. It's not necessarily based on the style of hockey that he wants to play, although I don't hear a lot of people saying, oh, that's not the way to go. But I think it's just based on the fact that, you know, we all watched CBC when Toronto was in the playoffs for, you know, the first time in 7 years or seven seasons last spring. You know, we all know that they should have beat Boston, a team that eventually got to the Stanley Cup playoffs before they kind of frittered it away in Game 7. So I think people are just kind of starved for victory. And if, you know, Brian Burke's way has led to success in the past, then they're certainly willing to give it a try.
Final question for you, as you know, obviously when Jay Feaster hired Bob Harley, they have a close relationship, godfather of the children and the whole deal there. Is he on borrowed time?
Burke said that he likes the coaching staff, that he's happy with the way the team is working, and that he's going to keep those guys at least through the end of the year. And I interpret that to mean that the new general manager is going to have a lot of say on who the coach is after this season. In a sense, maybe it's a bit of an audition, excuse me, for Bob Hartley after a new GM is in place, that he has X number of months to kind of build a relationship with that guy before the decision is made after the season. And then the new general manager will have a lot of say in who comes in. Whether Hartley's on borrowed time or not, I think next year's the last year of his deal. Typically not a great year for a coach in terms of a guy who might be on quote-unquote borrowed time already. Usually won't last in the last year of that deal, but sounds like he's going to get through the end of this season anyways, and then the new guy and Brian will make that decision.
Wes Gilbertson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Sun. Wes, thanks very much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the Flames-Sabres game later on this afternoon.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Take care, Wes. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our two most recent guests, Frank Provenzano from ESPN and Wes Gilbertson from the Calgary Sun. This segment of the show is brought to you by The Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner at 423 McMillan Avenue. Craft beer, great food, delicious cocktails, and enough HD TVs to guarantee that you won't miss a minute of the action. The Chill Bar and Grill, Illegal Curve away game headquarters. Check them out online at chillbar.ca.
Chill, Drew.
Next week, which is December 21st.
Next Saturday, yes. One week from
next
today.
Next Saturday, the Ezzies, which are my little Twitter awards that I do, are going to be at the Chill. So
the fact that sentence just was anyways, what? Go on.
If you go on Twitter, you'll see I did some Twitter awards last year. I'm going to do them next Saturday at the Chill. So if you don't have plans, come on down.
Well, speak of the devil,
the Ezzies.
Speak of the devil, there's a faux Ezzy out there. Not ICEzzyG.
The best
on Twitter.
It's the best Twitter account I've ever seen.
It's fake Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow fake Ezra Ginsberg at not ICEzzyG. Just tweeted, "How smooth am I this morning? Tune in tsn.ca/Winnipeg." So it's your fake Twitter account is promoting you. So is the fake Twitter account going to do the fake Ezzies?
Good question.
That's a good point. That fake Twitter account is definitely up, though, for an Ezzy, for best fake Twitter account, for sure. But yeah, that would be funny if you did a fake Ezzy's. That's good. Yeah, it's funny. It's all in good fun.
The fact there's a fake Ezra Ginsburg Twitter account is brilliant. Some of these tweets are amazing.
Well, the first tweet was just pizza, which is accurate because, well, you know, I love pizza.
You know, I which led me to tweet, how am I going to know the difference between the fake one and the real one based on that tweet?
It's funny.
Thank you. You know, did Brian Burke give Jay Feaster a fair shot?
No, but I mean, you knew when Brian Burke got that job that Feaster was on was done. Come on, I mean, just fire Feaster that time.
Well, that's just it. I mean, he said, you know, I need to spend 90 days evaluating the team, and on the 91st day, he goes ahead and fires them. I mean, why go through the motions to begin with? Why not? Like, I mean, Feaster knew the writing.
Yeah, sorry, Drew. He let him make trades too. You know, the Smead trade. So it wasn't like he didn't let him make moves. It was kind of odd.
Well, let's be honest though. I think Smead is a Burke guy also. So I mean, it's not like he was, you know, trading away a Burke guy to acquire a smaller forward or something.
Yeah, you know, Drew, Brian Burke's going to bring in his crew. I think it'll be a Toronto guy, one of those Leafs guys, to come in and play that truculent, blah, blah, blah. A lot of talk there. And you know what? I mean, and Hartley's probably gone, too. I mean, Hartley's Feaster's guy, and Hartley's done a nice job there. Marty Jelena and Jacques Cloutier. He's done a real nice job. So, you know, but Burke goes where he goes. He brings his guys. You know, he's in Vancouver. He had Crawford at that time. But he had Carlisle in the system, went to Anaheim, brought in Carlisle, went to Toronto. Brought in Ron Wilson, who was his buddy, then brought in Carlisle. So, I mean, the idea is he always brings in his guys. And he's like Mike Keenan that way. You know, every Mike Keenan team had Stephane Matteau and Brian Noonan and a bunch of other guys. So he had the same guys, and who he trusted, and probably to a fault for both of them. So what you're going to have in Calgary is, I think he's going to bring, like, if you're like, you know, as Wes mentioned, you're Jim Benning in Boston, you're Brad Treliving, who we've had on this program before, in Phoenix. You're Jim Gordon, or Jeff Gordon, I forget which one it is, in New York.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of very talented, you're Lawrence Gilman in Vancouver, you're a bunch of these guys. You're not going over to Calgary to let Brian Burke run your show unless, see, the assistants I mentioned are ones who I think will eventually get gigs in the NHL. You might see, as Wes mentioned, a guy who's a little bit less established possibly get an opportunity he might take. What I'm saying is, if it's not one of Burke's guys, I think the assistant GM that comes over will be somebody who's a little bit lower down on the quote-unquote totem pole for next jobs available, because he's more willing to say, hey, I'm going to get a shot to be a GM, let's take my chances, as opposed to a Brad Treliving who's done a great job with Don Maloney and is happy there, has you know, certainly a lot of input into decision-making, and realizes that it's probably a better position later on that he can find and not have to be under Brian Burke's thumb.
Right, and everyone knows that Brian Burke, because, as Richie mentioned, he was the GM of the Canucks, he was Bettman's former right-hand man. I mean, Brian Burke's a powerful guy, and everybody kind of sees that, and whether you want to call it president of hockey operations or GM, I think Wes made a good point, though. I think it's similar to Sakic and Sherman in Colorado. Sakic is really running the show there now, and Greg Sherman is the GM. So however you want to put titles on what the power structure is or what the hierarchy there is, I think Brian Burke is the man calling the shots, and whoever comes in there, and I think that goes to your point, Richie, is he going to bring someone he's familiar with from the Toronto days, the Vancouver days, or is he going to bring in a guy who's fresher and doesn't really have aspirations to be a GM? And some of these guys, we all know there are certain guys that do want to become general managers that are currently assistant general managers, and it's very tough. There are, you know, Wes mentioned that too in the interview. There's only 30 general manager jobs, and a lot of these general managers, Richie mentioned it, Sather's not going anywhere. Maloney's not going anywhere. Chiarelli's not going anywhere. Gillis, all of these guys have big-time job security from their owners. So if you're an assistant general manager who kind of looks at their career trajectory and says, oh, I want to be a general manager, well, right now it doesn't look good in Calgary because Brian Burke right now is putting his stamp on the team. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, Jay Feaster, I think, did a good job there. And I think, you know, he was in a tough position. People say, oh, should he have started rebuilding earlier? You know, the Iginla trade, could he have got more? Should he have traded Iginla earlier? Well, it's a tough position to be in. The Smead trade was good. You know, even though the scouts have a say in who's drafted, he was the general manager. Monahan looks like an unbelievable pick right now. Well, no, I shouldn't say looks like. He is an unbelievable pick. At 18 years old, he's been great. He's a Calder candidate right now. So I think the timing is a little bit weird. I thought the Darcy Regier timing was weird too. So you trade Vanek and then you let him go. It's kind of a weird time. You'd almost think that he would have waited till the end of the season, but you know, it is what it is, as they say. And you know, we'll see who emerges as the next GM of the Flames.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Let's go to break, and when we come back, Team Canada assistant coach Ralph Kruger is going to join us.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.